Good afternoon, everyone. Call this work meeting to order. Present, we have our city manager, Matthew Brower, Councilman James Hilty, our mayor, Kent Gwynn, Councilman Molliver, Councilman Musley, and Councilwoman Mary Sue Rich. Before we get to go any further, is there any public comments today regarding anything? With that, I'll turn it over to our city manager.
Great, thank you, Council President, members of City Council. On this afternoon's agenda, we have two items. The first item, which will be discussed today, is the proposed project on the former Sprint building. That will be followed by a discussion with the Ocala Development Hotel project slated for the Chamber of Commerce parcel. We'll start with A, which is the project with the former Sprint building. We're going to kind of tag team this. Jimmy and Mark and I will kind of work you through it. We're going to be working through a term sheet. I don't know if we have copies of that.
You know what? Do you have copies of the term sheet at your desk?
No.
We're going to make a set.
Let's make a copy of it. I think it would assist the process Jimmy tries to work through that. And so we will tag team it. We certainly invite council members to stop us as we make the presentation, to ask for clarifications, ask questions, make sure that you have all the information that you feel like you need before leaving the work meeting today. Jimmy, do you feel comfortable in the beginning, or do you want to wait for that term sheet to come back?
Pardon?
You want to wait till the term sheet comes back?
It's up to y'all, however you want to do it.
Why don't we just, if you don't mind, wait a second.
Okay, let's go on a holding pattern for about a minute and a half, and then we'll start once that sheet comes back. Okay.
How long do you anticipate your portion, when I say you, the three of you, this portion of the presentation?
Ours will not take very long.
Okay.
We would like to, of course, vet it thoroughly, so you feel like you have a pretty good understanding of the terms of the deal and any questions answered. I can't imagine taking more than 30, 45 minutes, and then we can transition into the second topic on the agenda, which is the hotel project.
Okay. So really, an hour, roughly, total.
Now, an hour 15, perhaps.
Yeah, okay. Mr. Musley gets a little sensitive when we get too long.
Why do I always get blamed?
You know, a good attorney would have had all this done.
Have you found a good attorney? Let me know.
I'll take that.
No such thing.
I'll take credit for not having the sheets out there.
But thank you, Mr. Molliver.
You're welcome.
This is a great time for public comment.
Yeah.
Words of wisdom. Price is itching to say something.
Well, here it is right here. Thank you, Chip. All right, let's go ahead and proceed with the discussion on the former Sprint building using the term sheet kind of as the guide for our conversation. Jimmy?
In March last year, the city and McBride Land and Development Company entered into an agreement that provided the developer with an inspection period to inspect the property and determine if it wanted to proceed with the development. Under the agreement, which actually could have morphed into an actual conveyance of the property, development of the property, that if the developer decided to commence with construction, once the developer paid $1 million in development costs, the city would deed the property to developer for no additional consideration. The primary city incentive under that agreement was consistent with our prior agreements concerning downtown development. The city would waive or pay on behalf of the developer plan review, inspection, and impact fees. The city staff has estimated that would be approximately $44,000. All these numbers that we're going to be using today are rounded off. Once the developer got the property from the city, the developer would complete construction of the improvements to the building. Anticipated that the improvements would be condominium-type improvements, perhaps with some retail on the first floor. The developer has come to the city with a problem that, based upon its analysis of the work that was going to need to be done, it would cost about $3.7 million to proceed with the project, which was about $1 million more than the developer originally anticipated. Thus, the developer is looking for additional incentives from the city to determine whether or not it wants to proceed with the project. City staff, Estrita and Mark, have developed some incentives for consideration by City Council. We've lumped them there on the bottom of the first page into five groups. The first would be the consistent with the prior decision, $44,000 in waiver of payment of fees, and then four other items that I'll discuss separately. The first new item would be for the city to perform necessary work to bring electric, water, and sewer utilities to the building, including installing electric transformer and water and sewer meters. City estimates that the cost of this work would be $208,000. For all of this work that we're going to be discussing, it could be structured to provide that the city would either do the work itself, or the city would, in essence, contract with the developers, a contractor, to perform the work and pay the contractor for the work. So that's the first group of additional incentive, the utility work. The second work is actual work to the building itself. Staff has estimated that the cost to remove the asbestos will be $68,000, to renovate and rebuild the elevator, $121,000, to repair the roof, approximately $58,000. That work totals $247,000. The final component of work that the city would do would be toward the end of the project, and that would be performing site work, parking lot construction, landscaping, irrigation, and streetscapes. Estimated cost of that work would be $261,000. The final component of incentive that staff has developed would be a rebate to the developer of the tax increment. As y'all are familiar from your CRA financing, the community redevelopment areas, the improvements in there are funded by what's called TIF financing, tax increment financing. And in essence, as tax values go up based upon, in this case, renovation of that building, the taxing authorities would receive additional revenues. The city would, in essence, rebate to this developer all the portions of those additional revenues until the developer received $266,000. It's not a CRA, but it is a form of tax increment rebate. The formula is the same. It's just not a CRA. And in this case, the money would be paid directly to the developer. Under this, these proposals, developer would receive about $1,027,000 in incentives. All of these incentives would, except for the tax increment rebate, be provided in the form of city work, either city work performed by the city or city work paid by the city, as opposed to direct payments to the developer. The payments to the developer would only be from a rebate of the tax increment based upon the increased value. And if we did these, we would try to develop and tie the incentives to modified milestones to make sure that the developer was performing the necessary work before the city was obligated to perform its work. Staff has come up with these ideas to present to y'all, and it's up to y'all in terms of whether you are interested in proceeding along these lines.
I'd like to provide a couple additional comments, if I might. I wanted to talk a little bit about why we structured it this way and give you a little bit more information about some of the dollars in the project. First of all, as you know, all of our agreements that we try to do are generally performance-based. And in this case, with Sandy's project, it is certainly performance-based. Sandy's going to be committing $1 million to the project of his own money prior to recording a mortgage on the property and prior to the city conveying the property. And as we go forward in the project, there are a number of things, obviously, as Jimmy outlined, that the city would be paying for. I wanted to point out a couple of things. The dollars that are indicated are largely from the developer's contractor as they receive bids or quotes. The number of those costs are based in reality, not just staff estimates. We've tried to do verification as much as we could on some of those numbers. They are not to exceed numbers ultimately in the project. So if there are additional costs in a project, it would be a responsibility of the developer. And in terms of the total dollars amount, realize that some of these costs are costs that the city ultimately are going to have, regardless if we do a project with Sandy or not. If we do a project on that block, and in particular in that building, some of these costs are going to be related to any project, and they're off-site related costs. So for example, the city utility work under item number 5, the $208,000, a number of those costs are not necessarily just to benefit Sandy, but are to benefit the balance of the block for future redevelopment opportunity. Obviously, the waiving or paying of fees, those are fees that we otherwise would not have if the project didn't move forward. For example, the tax increment rebate is similar, that currently we're not generating taxes on the property, and so we're not talking about paying money out of current fund balance for rebates as Sandy either owns the property and pays taxes or sells units to others who pay taxes. Those monies would be then paid back to Mr. McBride, and so it's not money coming out of the city's current coffers, and so they're dollars that we don't currently have, and we would just forego receiving them for a period of time. Ultimately, the city will receive the tax dollars. In addition, of course, we're also going to receive electric utility payments, water and sewer payments, if they become a fiber optics customer, fiber payments. I think there are a number of other considerations in the project. Obviously, if this project was not to move forward and the city retained ownership of that building, if the city ultimately decided not to move forward with any redevelopment of that building or decided to tear the building down, you've probably got $200,000, maybe more, in costs to tear that building down. We received an estimate probably 8 years ago that was $100,000 to tear the building down, but at that time we didn't know there was asbestos in the building, and so you've got additional costs for asbestos removal. Plus, if you tore it down, you probably would want to regrade that entire site to get it in a development condition. So no matter which way you go, there's costs. And so I don't want you to be misled to think that all of the costs in this project are solely related to Sandy's project, or costs that we wouldn't have to deal with if we didn't deal with Mr. McBride's project. I also wanted to point out a few other things for you to consider. If the project was to proceed, first of all, you're talking about taking a building that's been vacant for a number of years and putting a new use in it, which is a good thing. And it'll be a building that will ultimately go back on the tax rolls. If it's successful, it'll help to establish a downtown residential market. And for a number of years, as you know, City Council and its downtown master plan has said that having a residential component is one of the key goals of the master plan. And we've not had anyone come forward to try to establish residential. And so if it is successful, it clearly will establish a market. Mr. McBride's investment in that property will increase property values around the property. And I think we have not estimated what that will be. It's very difficult to determine that, but we know that that will happen. Of course, Mr. McBride is a local developer, and there is some consideration there in the sense that he's well vested in the community. He will provide adequate on-site parking for his project. There is currently an adequate balance in the TIF account to pay for some of these incentives if you decide that you do want to go forward with it. And so staff at this point, in our opinion, you have sort of a policy decision before you. We're recommending that if you ultimately decide you want to proceed with the project with Mr. McBride as he's proposed it, that we would do the incentives this way. And the policy decision, of course, is it the right time? Is it the right developer? Is it the right project?
I might finalize some of the staff's comments by indicating that if council chooses to support this project, that it does advance the interest of the city strategic plan, most notably goals 1 and 4. Goal 1, of course, would be an economic hub. Goal 4 is a quality of place. This project also, of course, advances council's strategic interest in the downtown, trying to elevate it from, and it will do downtown, to a world-class downtown. So we think it very appropriately fits within your strategic plan.
One last comment. I apologize for missing this. There is some precedent for doing incentives this way. I want you to be aware of that. The notion of putting a roof on the building, the city has done that before. When we did the exchange with the Chamber of Commerce, we relocated from the Chamber site into the former building department. The city re-roofed that building as part of that deal. There's also been a deal where the city built a parking lot. If you recall, when we did Ansaphone, one of their major concerns was they needed adequate parking. And so the city bought land and built a parking lot for Ansaphone. So there is some precedent for trying to structure a deal this way.
Okay. Council, any comments for staff or questions? Or for the developer?
I want to ask.
Ms. Rich, go ahead.
Mark.
Yes.
Is there anything in there that says Mr. McBride has to do thus, thus, and thus? And if he doesn't, whether the property would come back to us, any callbacks or anything, or we just go on with the project? I don't like those.
There is an agreement ultimately, if we bring you back an agreement, if you decided you want to move forward with the project and we bring it back to a council meeting and we revise the agreement. There are clauses in terms of time schedules for submitting plans and achieving permits for the plans. So there is a process that Mr. McBride and a schedule have to meet. And Mr. Gooding will correct me if I'm wrong in this statement. Ultimately, and the other thing that we would hope to achieve if you want to go forward is, we've talked to Mr. McBride about this, is that as he builds his project and puts his money in, we want to be behind him. We don't want to be ahead of him and putting the taxpayer dollars in. So the worst case scenario, we'd be even with him, but the best case scenario is he's ahead of us so that if something goes wrong, we would stop. Once he expends his $1 million and we convey the land to him and the billing to him, I would say that there are no other specific controls that the city has to regain control over that property. So there is, it's not without risk, of course. I think Mr. McBride would argue, and I think that this is a valid argument, that once he expends $1 million out of his own pocket, there's a point of no return for him as well. And he probably could speak to that better than we could. And that's one of the big differences in this project compared to any of the other redevelopment projects we've done. We have someone that's willing to put $1 million of their own cash into the deal up front. That's a major consideration.
I would say that's the main reason. I mean, he's actually put $1 million of his own money, so. That's a good question.
Like all projects, there is risk, Ms. Rich, on this project. And Jimmy, would you agree or disagree?
That's accurate. The biggest check is that the developer does not get title to the property until he spends $1 million on improvements. But once he does so, then the city has no way to get the property back. I anticipate, and Sandy's here, and he can correct me if I'm wrong, I'm anticipating that Sandy's going to put that initial money in from his own funds, that he wants title to the property so that then he can encumber it with a mortgage to finance the rest of construction. Is that reasonable?
Yeah, I would say so.
The bank will then get an agreement that would permit the bank, if it thought that it was in the bank's best interest, to complete construction if Sandy defaulted during construction. That's the only real city risk, is a default after the $1 million and before Sandy completes construction. There, the bank would have the ability to complete the project if it wanted to, and if the bank thought it was, you know, that it was more likely to get rid of the project with completed improvements in it, then the bank would do that. If it didn't, then it would try and sell a half-finished building. In either circumstance, I would suspect that somebody would come in there once $1 million already been spent on it and ultimately finish construction. So instead of having a sandbox to look at for a while, you'd have a half-completed shell. But I would suspect that in this circumstance, somebody would finish that building.
There are a few other risks that I want to bring to your attention, potentially, and Jimmy will correct me if I'm wrong or perhaps add additional color to this. Because it's a construction project, I assume that there will be some possibility of contractor liens or subcontractor liens, and Jimmy, you could address that.
No, it doesn't attach to public property.
Okay. It's possible that Sandy could complete the project and the units might not sell at all, or they may take a long period of time. If we have a completed project and it's finished, both the site and the exterior of the building, and the units don't sell, we don't ultimately have exactly what we wanted, but the lion's share of that risk and cost has been, the burden's been placed on Sandy. And then there could be unanticipated construction delays due to unforeseen conditions. Because it's a construction project, things could happen in that schedule. So there could be some possibilities that the schedule that we have in the agreement could have to be extended. What we would bring back to you is an agreement that will have ability for the city manager to offer an extension up to 6 months. if it was to go beyond that, and Sandy would have to explain why, has to have legitimate reasons why we need to extend. If it had to go beyond that, then he would have to be before council, and you'd have to decide if it was worthy of extension. Those are the ones that I could think of as some of the risks.
And everything Mark said is accurate. The issue of the lanes, the statute's very clear that public property cannot be leaned. If I were an unpaid contractor, I would argue for an exception in this case, because this is public property that's about to turn into private property. There's obviously been no cases on anything like that, but statute says we can't be leaned. Our contract with Sandy says we can't be leaned.
There's probably one additional risk. It's more of a soft risk as I try to define it. As I see this project, it's intended to be a catalytic project, right? It's intended to spur additional investment in the downtown. And the risk, of course, is it doesn't do that. It doesn't somehow spur others to begin investing in the downtown, particularly in the residential element. So that is probably another risk.
Yes. Mr. Musley?
Yeah, I've got a few comments, and I'm going to start out by saying that I've talked to Jimmy Gooding about this. I will not be voting on this when it comes to council because of the relationship Sandy and I have. Sandy, as you, most people in the room know, sits on the board of directors of the bank that I'm an executive officer of. Having said that, I've also talked to Jimmy, and he feels it's appropriate that I can make comments as a citizen as to the viability of the project. And I think I do bring the banker's hat to the table as well. And I would suggest that the key differences from this, from some of our other failed projects, particularly the Gutman project and then the tomato farm, which never got off the ground, is we got a local developer this time who's willing to put $1 million of his own money in the project. I don't think we've had that before. I think this accomplishes our main goal of getting redevelopment, particularly residential redevelopment, into downtown, and it transfers the risk over to Mr. McBride as to whether he can sell out that residential development. I would suggest to you, if we fail to move forward on this with Mr. McBride, that we need to be prepared to tear down the building and expend those funds to tear it down, to clean it up from asbestos, and to regrade it, because I would suggest at that point in time it's just not it's not a viable project for anybody to come up with and redevelop it.
Go ahead. Mark, and knocking down the building, regrading, we could be anywhere from $300,000 to $500,000.
You know, I'm not sure, John. Is it possible? Yes. We have not got a recent estimate to do it. I'm very comfortable saying it'll be at least $200,000. Could it approach 300? I think there's a chance of that, yes. I'm not sure five. I don't know that it would go as high as five.
The regrading is the part that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean.
Right. You've got some elevation issues on that site.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Mr. Mayor.
Yeah, and I would echo Councilman Musley's comments. If we don't do this, I would agree, or if Sandy doesn't do this, to tear the building down and get it ready for something else there, because if Sandy's not going to do it, I don't think anybody else is. But one of the things, and I know Matt, you addressed this being a catalytic site, and in our master plan that we have, it talks about that it is that, and the chamber site being the catalytic site. But I appreciate the what ifs and the risks and everything. But one thing we failed to do is talk about what would happen if it was successful. We always figure out 57 different ways how not to do something and what's going to go wrong with it. Many times we don't talk about what would happen if it was successful. What would happen if Sandy did it and there's all of a sudden 20 professionals living in the downtown area, and what would happen if people saw that and went, wow, this is actually a reality, this is actually happening. And then Bryce and Albert and Kirk, do their project, and then people start building residential area, in some of the other parts. And then they jump over to North Magnolia, and the Gaslight District starts to happen, and people start to have confidence, in the downtown that this is really gonna happen because of what, Sandy did. Those are the things that I would look at, from a positive nature. But, we obviously all also have to assess, what the risks are, what happens if it does go wrong. But also, like Councilman Musley said, this is everything we've asked for. Local developer, local builder, local money, with a history of success and, virtually everything he's done. So probably doesn't get much better than this.
Councilman Mull?
Yeah, I just want to make a few comments. I won't be as long as the mayor, I promise. I've known Sandy for many, many years. Anything he tells you, he'll stand behind it. And that's where I've always found him to be. And I'm happy that he's trying to do something for the downtown. The only thing is, I wish he'd put 60 units in there instead of 18. It would even be better. And maybe later he'll add to it, I don't know. But some of the questions that you brought up today has answered some of my feelings and things. What kind of price range are you talking about, Sandy, of selling over there?
We're probably looking in the $200,000 range. That is my target market. We were trying to do larger and nicer units, and we found, due to the economies of scale or whatever, that we had to do more units, make smaller units, and then try and get our price point that was affordable to a lot of people. We're probably looking at around $200,000.
Okay.
But the units probably won't be but about 1,100 square feet. So we've got the option to put more than one or two units together, but that you have to have a model to see if it's economically feasible, and that's what we're using. Six units per floor at $200,000 a unit. And then again, my total cost on top of the million to get it to where it's deeded over to me, then I have to put in another $1.7 million into the project to finish it out. And you know, you go, well, gosh, that's a lot of money. If you go in with any incentives, you're looking at $3.7 million. That is complete build out. But these units are going to be very nice, and it's going to be first class. And you know, when you go in, you know, we were talking about, well, maybe doing curtain walls like they're in there now, but we're talking about balconies, which I think will really make it more visibly appealing, and do additional skin, what we call skin work, on the outside mm-hmm. of the building to make it a first class, top notch project.
Something like they did down on Edgewater Drive in Orlando.
Well, I hadn't seen that, yeah, but it was like, I did not want to do anything that was, you know, that wasn't,
yeah,
something
they did
that
it down
everybody
there.
Would be very proud of, including it, y'all, including
it took off there. Down there, of course. They did about 150 of them on an old bank type thing.
Right. And Holland Drake has done a tremendous amount of work on this thing to get it to where we are now. The 2.7 that I'll eventually have into the project doesn't include any of the money that we've spent so far, which probably comes in around $75,000.
Okay. That's all. Thank you.
Councilman Hilton,
I'd just like to concur with everything that's been said, but I just know over the years there have been many promises made to the citizens of Marion County and the city and all that stuff, and in a perfect world, we may find something a little bit better, but I doubt it. I think this is as close as we can get to start the impetus of moving things and delivering on the promise that's been made for years to come.
Yes. And from my standpoint, I mean, the fact that this is an urban renewal project, and you know, if we did absolutely nothing and Sandy decided he wants to walk away, we've got a great deal of expenses just to get that property up to where we could do something with it, or right. sell it, or whatever. You know, we decided to do so.
If I could interject, it's the million that I put in. If we do a stage where at some point the city's contribution comes in the form of an elevator or a roof, that's on top of the $1 million.
Right.
So you're going to have more than $1 million into the project before it is even that you still own before it's deeded over. So, you know, that was my original proposal. I thought at that time, I go, you know, based on some of the things that have happened in the past, it shows a true investment, out-of-pocket investment, before the city is required or asked to to contribute any additional improvements.
And, yeah, just to further, I mean, this is, like Council Musley said, this is everything that we have asked for downtown, from a living component to a local developer to bringing, putting his own money in the game. So for that reason, I would be very supportive of it. And the fact that he's hired a local contractor with a quality name to do the majority of his work, so.
Can I just say one more thing?
Go ahead, Mr. Mayor.
Yeah, I mean, and I just want to say that, you know, projects like this are difficult to do. I mean, that's why we have to incentivize, you know, these type projects cities do all over the country. You know, if this were 15 acres out in the pasture, you know, it'd be easy, you know. But it's not. And, you know, this is what successful communities do. I know we look at other communities and wonder how in the world they develop their downtowns. Well, this is how you do it. So we're thankful that you're, you know, willing to, you know, take the risk and be involved in this.
Well, and one, if I was in your seat, I would say, well, why do we have these cost overruns? And originally when we thought we could utilize some of the infrastructure that is in the building now. The elevator, you know, we've got some plumbing, we've got electrical, the roof we weren't sure about. And so you go, now that we've done all these studies, if the project goes forward, it will be completely gutted. The only thing that were left is the concrete and the steel. So it'll look like a parking garage at some point, and because all the walls will come out,
right.
and we have to start from scratch to go back up. And, you know, that I really think it's going to be a superior building as what that you would build new now, which most of them are frame, and this will be concrete. There are 14 foot ceilings that are concrete floors, concrete ceilings, which is what everybody, you know, with the loft concept is really looking for.
Any more questions from Ms. McBride or comments?
Sandy, do you think we should have some clawbacks in the contract, or do you think that's unnecessary?
Well,
I personally think, because we don't live in a perfect world, and I just think we need clawbacks, which is no damage to you, and it's not saying that I don't think you're going to do a great job. And I'm glad that somebody in Marion County, or in Ocala, is willing to invest their money.
Right.
There's no doubt about that. But I just feel that.
Well, the one thing about it is the tax rebates over property taxes will take 20 years. That is no, there will be no money out of pocket to the city with regards to that. That's money, if we didn't do the project, the taxes wouldn't be there. There would be no taxes. So you're not coming out of pocket there. And if you're running infrastructure to the building, which is over a couple of hundred thousand dollars, the infrastructure will still be there that to the building. And as Mark said, will provide infrastructure to the entire block. So that money, I don't think would be wasted or could not be recouped or reutilized. You know, the elevator, the roof, and maybe the parking lot, which the parking lot, again, would still be on city land until I put in my portion of the money, you would still be able to utilize that. The elevator and the roof, again, I've already got $1 million into it. You would, if I don't do it, you would retain that building with my $1 million and have a new elevator and have a new roof. So the clawback, the way I would look at it if I was sitting there is going, you know, almost the worst case scenario is we end up with a building that we paid for an elevator, we paid for a roof, and that Mr. McBride put $1 million in that he forfeited. So I don't know, you know, and if something happened and the project totally fell through, you could probably get something back out of the elevator But I know I understand your concern, but I would think it would be minimalized by me having to put up that much money before you would even, you know, not have control or not have ownership of the building.
Jimmy, what do you think?
It's really a business issue for y'all, Ms. Rich. And by the way, I should have told the y'all, the three of y'all know this, but Mr. Hilton and Mr. Malinger, I've represented Mr. McBride in the past. Whenever I have private clients come up here, I always tell counsel that. And y'all haven't been up here since he's been here, so I need to tell y'all that. But Mr. McBride understands that when I'm sitting up here representing the city, that I only represent the city. And sometimes he complains about my representation of the city.
No, not just when you're representing me.
But in any event, in response to your question, Ms. Rich, it is really a policy issue for the city. The main risk, there's two risk points that I see the city could have in this project, two timing risk points. The first would be before Sandy spends the $1 million. At that point, you own the land, and conceivably, you could then still have to spend the money that Mr. McLeod's talking about now to tear the building down, if that's what you wanted to do. At that point, you would have been out the $44,000 for the waiver of fees and the $208,000 in utility work, and that's under the assumption that the new guy, the new developer, did not want to proceed with the project. So that's the first risk point, is he defaults before the $1 million. The second risk point is he defaults after the $1 million. There you would have spent the $44,000, the $208,000, and perhaps some of the $247,000. I don't know, Sandy, and Mark may know, whether the roof and asbestos stuff is going to be before or after the million. If it's after the million, then the city wouldn't have spent that. If it's before, then the city would have. At that point, though, Sandy would own the land and the city would not get it back. And so you'd either end up with a half-finished building or you would end up with the bank going in and finishing it. But the city would have no way at that point to tear the building down because we wouldn't own it. So it's up to y'all to decide whether that's enough, whether that's too much risk for you to take. I don't think that Mr. McBride, if he does plan on financing it after he spends that million, a bank's not going to agree to lose its mortgage and allow the city to take the property back, you know, if Mr. McBride defaults. They've got that mortgage and they're going to want to keep it. Now, if the city wanted to pay off that mortgage and get it back that way, you could, but that's a kind of a different story.
Can I ask Mr. Musley's opinion on that?
Sure. And by the way, I have Mr. Musley's accurate terms of what I've advised him, and we're going to get an opinion as to whether he can even vote on it. The statute's not clear that he can't even vote.
Right.
But in the meantime, he certainly can express his opinion, and not just as a private citizen, but also as elected official. Elected officials are permitted to participate in a discussion, even where there's a voting conflict situation, as long as they don't vote.
Well,
so he's doing exactly right.
And I'm asking...
Just, as a banker.
Yeah, as a banker, and yeah, we realize you've represented everyone in Ocala, so.
Only, well, I was going to say, other than Mr. Bride, and, well, never mind.
from a banker standpoint, like if you make the loan to him,
what typically would happen? You can't have clawbacks in it. There would be a tri-party agreement between Mr. McBride as a developer and the bank and the builder, that if the bank wanted to and Mr. McBride defaulted, the bank could complete the project, as Mr. Gooding has said. They would complete it with their own funds and the developer would be out of it. And I'm assuming so would our responsibility to refund the tax increment, 266.
Yeah, all that stuff would be contingent on finishing the building.
But it doesn't have clawbacks, but it's got mechanisms that act as clawbacks,
right,
or act as fail-safes to protect the city's investment in this.
Well, that's kind of what I'm getting at. And then the fact that if you put some type of clawback on it, wouldn't that make it more difficult to get a loan?
Well, it would make it impossible.
Okay, yeah, that was my question.
Mr. President,
go ahead.
And to you, Councilman Musley, if the bank did get it back, would the terms of that agreement go to the bank so that the bank would then have an asset that would have all those pluses in it that they could market it and say, look, we've got a waiver on property taxes, we've got all these incentives?
Well, I'll
would that go with the bank?
I would not suggest we draw it up that way. I would suggest we draw it up that we don't provide the tax rebate unless the building is finished.
Right.
Now, if the bank, because I don't want there to be a guarantee that the bank can do that.
Right.
I would rather hold that back as an incentive
okay.
for the bank to come back to us and say, hey, we will finish this if you do that.
Right, we have a buyer or whatever,
yes.
or we could market
yes.
it better and get rid of it.
Yeah,
okay.
but the city, if, and the bank would probably look at the city and say, if the city was willing to do this for Sandy, to get the building half finished, it's more than likely you could do it for us to get it completely finished. It's not
right.
costing them anything.
Okay.
But I would, if I were drawing this up, I would not provide for those things to run with the property.
Right.
Unless the bank also wants the obligation to build the building,
right.
which it's not going to do.
Right.
If I could provide one other comment, it's not in the document you have before you. It is a conversation that we have had with Sandy and his contractor, and we mentioned it to Jimmy, is if you ultimately decide you want to go forward, one of the other things we'd like to explore is the possibility of allowing the developer and the contractor to purchase building materials through the city in order to save sales tax. And the purpose there is, part of our goal will also be as staff is to try to make sure we're keeping the cost as low as possible. It only benefits ultimately the project and the taxpayers as if we're using as few taxpayer dollars as necessary. You also saw, as Jimmy outlined for you, not only could we hire the contractor, his contractor, to do the work, we could hire a separate contractor or we could use internal force. So we'll explore with Sandy and Holland and their construction schedule, what are ways that we could still ensure that he meets his schedule, that we get a high quality product, but we get it at the lowest cost possible.
This is a very common practice on other projects that
yeah,
we do. I mean, whether it's a road project
right.
or a building project.
Road projects, right? Absolutely.
Just, yeah.
Well, and I'd like to add that Mark and Matt have been very, very easy to work with from the standpoint of communications going back and forth. And, you know, as we talked about this morning, there's going to be a little bit of a level of trust that I'm putting into the city that I can get the permits that I needed on a timely basis, that this is going to be somewhat fast-tracked from the, not from any kind of safety standpoint, but from a turnaround time for approval of plans. And Mark and I have talked about that, and you know, he's trusting me that we're going to do what we're going to do, but he always has that in the back of the mind that I've got to put the money in before the building is deeded. Which is not, some things that haven't happened in the past is, you know, my good faith will be $1 million, not my promise that I will put $1 million. And again, the total investment in the building, just from my standpoint, is $2.7 million. So, you know, with these incentives, I mean, this is going to be a very, very expensive building. And it so therefore, it, you would think it would be a very appealing building for the residents and everybody involved. So,
okay, great. Any more questions for Mr. McBride? And
Mark had some.
Just not a question. I'm so sorry. I do want to acknowledge Estrita. She's the project manager in this project.
Yeah,
she's
I'm
put
sorry.
A tremendous
exactly.
amount of work. Has worked very closely with Sandy and Holland, and have an ultimate confidence in her ability
sorry.
To manage it if you elect to go forward.
Matt, and you would like direction from us. Is that correct?
Yeah, you can't make a motion, obviously, in a work
right.
meeting, but certainly like to, some direction from you on this project.
I guess I'll begin with that. And I'd like to see us proceed. And you don't need any more than that, do you?
No. Jimmy, Mark, any specific clarifications that we may need as we look to draft that contract?
No, there'll obviously be. Excuse me, be some issues that come up
okay.
during the drafting that we haven't contemplated. We'll work with the developer on that and then
okay.
bring them back to council if they involve significant business.
So as I understand council's marching orders, we will work off our term sheet
mm-hmm.
to move the project forward. Staff will engage Sandy and begin negotiating an agreement that we'll look to bring back to you in a matter of a couple months, if not sooner, and go from there.
Okay. Is that okay with council?
Absolutely.
Okay.
All right. Thank you,
Sandy. Nate. Next, we have Cal Development, and they're going to give us a brief overview on what's going on.
Yep.
I printed out the slides from our previous presentation. I was just going to do a brief overview of that for the new council members, and then give a short update on where we stand. So our development group is spearheaded by Ocala Development, and will include other prominent business leaders in Ocala, Marion County. Our office has been involved in the Marion County market for over 50 years, ranging from appraising, sales, construction and development, in both commercial and residential sectors. We looked at this project initially, you know, how did we get here? We looked at the 2035 vision and the downtown master plan, which identified the chamber site as the number one catalytic site for future development. And we, from our my involvement with the DBA, we talked with the downtown stakeholders about what they want and need. We want a new project that incentivizes new development. And an economic driver. This is something that we feel is differentiates us from some of the previous projects, is that the hotel will be a real economic driver for the downtown as opposed to increased competition. And it brings the ability to promote downtown as a regional destination to for travelers, events, concerts, and so forth. So our belief is that any development on that site needs to be an iconic structure that strengthens the sense of place. We believe that the square and its surrounding buildings really define the ambiance of downtown, and any development on that site needs to further that. Our concept has been to develop the chamber lot into a 90-room hotel with approximately 10,000 square feet of retail, food, and beverage space. We've always talked about it being an experiential hotel, one that would provide a unique visitor experience to attract customers into the downtown corridor. Initially, we had a boutique type concept, and as we've done more and more feasibility studies and worked with additional consultants, we've believed that a hotel with a well-known franchise, with an established brand, an international marketing campaign, reservation systems, and reward programs will be beneficial for the project and for downtown as a whole. Where we're at currently is that we have engaged two separate independent hospitality consultants to conduct feasibility studies. The first one was for sort of our initial concept and vision, if it would work in the Ocala Marion County market, and the second one has helped define the optimal square footage of the building, the room count, the room mix, the amount of space for the retail, beverage, and meeting space components, and ideal brands that would go along with the project. We've met with Glenn Gorky, who's the Senior Director of Development with Hilton Worldwide, and he has visited Ocala and the site, and he's excited about the project. And we've always talked about the hotel being a non-prototypical design with some of the established brands, but having an upgraded facade, exterior, and upgraded common areas that really add to the sense of place in downtown. Currently, we're in negotiations with three Hilton-approved architects to prepare conceptual renderings, site plans, elevations, and buildable blueprints for the project. And with these negotiations, we've come with a rough estimate of approximately $10 million for the price of the project, with a significant portion of that cost being from private equity. We have submitted our first draft of the developer's agreement to city staff, and we received their comments and from Jimmy this week. We're in the process of reviewing those comments internally, and plan to have a follow-up meeting with city staff as soon as possible. We foresee city staff preparing an extension before our March 19th deadline for us to iron out the details of the comments and revisions to the developer's agreement, but would like to get something in front of the city council to vote on as soon as we can. And with that, I open to questions.
Are there any questions for Bryce?
Is there a conference center built into that? You mentioned 10,000 retail. Is there any?
Yeah, the breakdown for the 10,000, we sort of see about 3,000 square feet for meeting space, conference space. It would probably accommodate anywhere from 100 to 125 people. Within that 10,000, 4,000 of it we foresee as being a restaurant use on the corner. And we haven't decided, but we're open to having some small retail components as well. but those would be minimal compared to the meeting space and the restaurant.
Any further questions for Bryce?
I just want to ask him, Bryce, did you ask any other hotel chain other than Hilton?
No, we haven't committed 100% to any one of the brands, but we've been researching other brands and been in discussions, but from our consultants and from our progress in the project, we've sort of liked the Hilton, Marriott, something that is, you know, internationally recognized and really brings a strong presence to the downtown corridor.
You're happy with the progress you've made up to this point?
Yeah, we've been working a lot in the background. You know, their city staff has been, I'll sort of second what Sandy said, that it's been great working with them as far as communication goes. There's been a lot going on the city's end. So we're excited that we've got the comments and revisions back. But while we've been waiting on that, we've been busy with our consultants and financing and designs and all this and that. So yes, we're happy. We sort of had a meeting yesterday with Mr. Hilty, and every step of the along the way, we've gotten more comfortable with us putting our investment into the project. And we look forward to holding hands with the city and seeing a successful project going on to the chamber site and helping the revitalization effort in downtown.
And the Hilton folks are happy with what
yes,
they see?
The Glenn Gorky, who is again the senior director of development for Hilton Worldwide, came down and visited the site. He was excited about it. We're in the process of submitting our franchise applications. There's still some flexibility there, but the franchise that we're exploring is excited about the project.
As far as the architecture, you can make it look like Ocala?
Yeah, the architects that were given to us by Glenn have all done multiple Hilton products across the nation, and most of the ones that he sent to us have experience with the non-prototypical design, because that's one of the things that we spoke to Glenn about, is making sure that it doesn't have just the cookie cutter facade that you see in some of the franchises out there, and that it needs to really fit in with the architectural heritage of downtown. And so they supplied us with contractors and architects that have that portfolio of work and experience to bring that type of product downtown.
Okay, that's great. Good.
Excellent. I guess I do have a degree in hotel and restaurant administration. I've never worked in the industry, but my original approach was, what's going to make that the destination for people to come and reserve? But in sitting down with them and some of the things that were brought out by, people that have a whole lot of expertise, which would be the Hilton and all that stuff, and talking, there are so many other aspects that could be used besides just people coming in here that I think there's multi-purposes out there just waiting for something like that. Plus, it's a catalyst to get things moving again, for what we promised for downtown and development and all that stuff, so.
Well, just one thing. Who were you president of the chamber?
2004.
Yeah, I mean, Jim and I have been talking about this project and doing something with that site for.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's part of my dream as it is yours, because I went through a lot in 2004 with the tourist development tax, getting that passed, and also trying to redevelop downtown and the things that were going. So, again, I think it's another project that we need to look at seriously. And there is need. There is more need, which I didn't even think about also. You brought up the courts. You got three courthouses over there with jurors coming in and going and attorneys coming at us. I think there is.
The attorney's office there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Mr. President, same thing when we go to Tallahassee with DoubleTree, Governor's Inn, all those hotels in the downtown setting. There's a reason you want to stay there. Yeah. It's because all the activity that's going on in the mm-hmm. downtown area. Same thing here. I mean, with all the activities that are going on in the downtown, this will be a destination. I think it'll be extremely successful. And given the fact that there was a hotel there for 100 plus years, it might not be a bad idea to have one there again.
Do you have any comments? Mm-hmm. Two questions. And tell me again when we expect the boring samples back from the Bank of America project.
That right of entry agreement is approved by City Council as of Tuesday, and we're in the process of processing it so that we can get Geotech in to complete those borings.
Right.
So I'm estimating that Geotech can be on the job in a couple of weeks at the outside.
Okay. And either one of you. In the linear park, when is the approval from that expecting from for the grant?
Yeah, you know, I've been working with the FRA, the Federal Railway Administration, for a very long time on that. Yeah, it, you know, that was approved in 2011. Mm-hmm. So since that time, I've been communicating with them, and we've been going back and forth on the scope and something called a categorical exclusion from environmental assessment and administration. I wish I had a logical answer for you, but it's the federal government, and I'm working as hard as I can to get them to approve that grant for us. I'm hoping, the last email that I received was, Estrita, we're close, we're very close. So I'm hoping in the next couple of weeks I get an affirmative from them.
Okay. Staff and Ocala Development, do you need anything from each other, or is everything going good from that standpoint?
Yeah, I have one question for Bryce. Yeah. When will the second feasibility study be done, and will that be available?
The second feasibility study has actually already been conducted, and it's came back favorable. We can probably provide city staff with the copy of the feasibility study. And as far, if you want to go ahead, as far as the linear park goes, we just want to make sure that it's all cohesive between, you know, the Sandy's project having a residential use and the linear park that connects Citizen Circle to Tuscaloosa, and then having our project there where we see the conference meeting space fronting that linear park. We just want to make sure that in any design aspects that affect the accessibility of the site and also the pedestrian utility of the site plan, making sure that all of those are thought out to where we can pull in the residential use into the downtown core and promote pedestrian traffic from the linear park into the downtown core along Broadway is how we visualize it. But just making sure that it's not necessarily an approval on the entire plans of the linear park, but anything that affects the accessibility of the site for the hotel is definitely something that we want to take a look at and be involved in those conversations as the plans continue.
Yeah, and this is Mark speaking, but at some point here, we probably should consider having a workshop with City Council or a public meeting, perhaps, where we invite some of the downtown business owners and properties owners just to talk about the linear park project and sort of show the drawings where we're at, make sure we get enough feedback on it that that everyone's issues have been considered and the potential benefits of their thoughts are considered. The other thing I would mention is, it's taking some time to move the project forward, but it's necessary. We want to move as quick as we can, and we certainly want to try to bring it to light as quick as possible here, but it's a complex project with a lot of parts and pieces. There's funding sources that are being considered that neither the developer or the city staff have experience with, and I think we're making good progress, but I guess I'm partly apologizing, but we are taking our time because it's worth doing it right if we're going to do this project. We want to make sure we get all of your questions answered. So thank you for your patience.
Agreed, but we don't have the other issues that we had in the fall that took up a lot of our time, so.
I agree.
Ms. Rich?
Bryce, did you say you have meeting rooms in there? I wasn't
listening
too closely. I know you said a restaurant.
We foresee having approximately 3,000 square feet of meeting space, and we'd want to accommodate like 100 to 125 people in the main meetings banquet area, and then we'd probably have some smaller breakout rooms where it would be more conference room type size that you could have smaller get-togethers in there as well.
Mr. Breyer, do you need anything from us, or did we just, this is an update, right?
This is primarily an update to give you some feedback, and I'm not sure if Mark or Jim need any additional clarification as we move forward. No? I think we've achieved our desired outcome.
And not to speak for the rest of everyone, but it sounds like we're still proceeding, so.
Yep, absolutely.
Yep.
Anything else? Anyone? Any comments? We're done.
What's 3,000 square feet like from here to the office?
Yeah. This room and that room.
Yeah.
Because this room's pretty big.
This room's probably 1,100 square feet maybe.
You and Todd this afternoon, I want to make sure I bring